Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill, and I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. As always, if you like what you hear here on the podcast, consider going to buymeacoffee.com/sportkite. Every little bit you chip in really, really does help keep this podcast hosted, helps us kind of keep finding more and more content that we want to share, and keeps us doing more and more interviews and all of that. So we are carrying on forward with the whole Team USA going to the World Kite Cup here. And by the time this episode drops, we will actually be headed to the airport or on the plane flying over to France. So I wanted to get this episode out for all of you that are following along with Team USA and just following along with the World Kite Cup in general. This is an interview that I did with two individuals who came to the final training week that parts of the team did in Long Beach, Washington last week. And these two individuals, we've talked about them a little bit before. They have a lot of legacy in the sport kite world. They are previous World Cup champions or World Sport Kite Cup champions. And that is Jerry and Marcia Cannon. They are wonderful folks, and they had a lot of insight in all aspects of the competition that we're about to go into. And they wanted to share it with not only myself, but also the rest of the team, give them feedback. And the thing that I really took away is the stuff that they wanted to make sure got passed down was stuff that has nothing really to do with actually flying kites, about the importance of an event like this and why doing stuff like this is important. So I hope you really enjoy this episode. And yeah, do stay tuned. We're going to be publishing a lot from the field there in Bourg-sur-Mer, France. We'll not only be doing a short little one-off episodes here on the podcast, I'll try to do daily reports. That's going to be completely dependent on the location and if I'm able to do it. I'll be doing a lot of reports on our YouTube channel. Just look for sportkite.org on YouTube. You'll find us there. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. We're going to be posting a lot into there. I'm working on having a WhatsApp and Discord channel, so I'll try and get all that information out. You'll be able to find it on our website and on the Facebook page and listed in our YouTube channel here shortly. So yeah, make sure you've hit the like, the follow button on all of that so you can see what's going on. We'll be doing some rough edits from the field, trying to get various competitors' videos up as we go. And then we'll have a longer edit after the whole event is over and we have a chance to sit down and relax and kind of go through everything. We'll bring those videos back here, back home to the big old computer and work on the longer edits of the whole event. So we're really going to stretch this out. We're going to enjoy every moment of it we can, relive every moment, and continue on after that. So one last note, if you're interested and you're in the area, we will be doing a little mini sport kite camp in May, the weekend of the 19th. We'll be down there in Long Beach. We'll have two members from Team USA. That'll be Paul DeBacher and Spence Watson in attendance. We'll likely also have the U.S. judge, the technical judge, Scott Weider, who has been a repeat person on this podcast. And he is one of the judges from World Kite Cup. He'll also be there. We're going to have a handful of other people there, and it's just a chance to hang out, to refine skills, to do all the good stuff. So if you can make it, let us know. You can find the details on our website. Just go to sportkite.org and click on the Sport Kite Camp tab. If you can't make the one in May, we understand. We also have one that we're going to be doing at Wiskiff, which will have the fireside chat. So it's a little bit more talking and a little bit more educational, kind of roundtable educational format, like we did last year. And then we're going to have one in New Hampshire in September. You can find the details for that as well. That's going back to our traditional sport kite camp, where it's all of us kind of together hanging out, sharing the stoke, and really diving deep on sport kites. So yeah, if you're interested in coming, it is open to all ages, all skills. It really is about, getting together with like-minded people in the sport kite community and kind of elevating not only ourselves but the sport. So check it out. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and hop into this episode. This has been a long intro, and yeah, I hope you enjoy. And I hope that in the future you get a chance to sit down with Jerry and Marsha Cannon and just kind of soak in some of the wisdom and some of the legacy of sport kite flying.
All right. Would you care to introduce yourselves?
Go ahead.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm
I'm Jerry
Marsha.
Cannon. We've only been married 57 years.
A whole 57 years.
And we're still flying together.
Yeah.
How long have you been flying together?
Ooh, what? 25 years?
You're the
Well,
big
about
kid,
that.
Right?
About 25 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Off and on, we've had a couple of different pairs routines. We did one called Last Flight Out, was our initial, and did well with it. And then Marsha came up with, I wanted to fly to Hibernia by Michael W. Smith. And it is all instrumental. And
very repetitive.
And it sounds like it's fairly flat, but it goes flat and then it adds another instrument. And then it goes flat and it adds another instrument. And it's got all of what you need in a pairs routine. It's got round, it's got square, it's got, just everything. But she struggled for...
Oh, it took me a couple of months to choreograph that
to get
piece
it all
of music.
So she didn't repeat anything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So typically, were you the one choreographing?
Yeah, for our pairs, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Nice.
But he hands me this music and I'm going, oh yeah, right.
Like, thanks, honey.
Yeah.
But yeah, she always did the choreography. She would help me with my choreography in the sense of, no, you should probably be doing, I'll go way back. Corey Jensen was on the microphone in Dayton, Ohio. The very first time I flew to Christian Music, and I wanted to get across that first you offer it to God and then you give thanks. Mm-hmm. And sorry.
It's all right.
I got everything I wanted from that microphone without ever asking. Because when I started the routine, it was called a prayer for Taylor. No words, no nothing, just music. And Corey says, after I finished, will you look at that? First, he offered it to God, then he gave thanks. And I went, you got it, Corey. You got it. And I loved his microphone. I loved the way he announced. And that kind of set the stage for me to what I do. And we do the same thing. You know, Michael W. Smith is the one that wrote Hibernia. And it's totally instrumental, but it is dynamic. So,
yeah, I was fortunate enough to meet Corey myself.
And, yeah.
Definitely a character.
Did you see him in his suit?
I saw him on the playa where he gifted me the title of the horny naked monkey chick because he convinced me to take off in the middle of the night on a playa run completely nude with a group of other flyers. And I'll just say that I've never been as exhilarated and terrified in my life as going across a desert playa at like 25 miles an hour completely naked getting sandblasted.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
But that was Corey. Corey convinced you to do ridiculous things.
Yep.
I don't think I'll ever do that one again.
No,
I wouldn't.
Once is enough.
Yeah, once is enough. Yeah.
You can say you've done it.
Yeah.
Whiskiff 1 year down here guy in a big truck, a big old jacked up truck with these monster tires, pulls into the soft sand and just lights it up. Oh. I mean, sand's going 20, 25 feet in the air.
Oh.
And he buried it right down to the axles.
Oh boy.
And Corey on the microphone said, "See, I told you, guys with big trucks ain't got no brains." I never laughed so hard in all my life. But that was Corey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back to choreography.
Yeah, we Corey and choreography.
We really had a struggle to start with because I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah.
But Marcia would say to me, "We're flying it this way because that's the way I wrote it."
Yeah, he wanted me to write it, and he had to fly what I put out there.
Yeah.
He tweaked it so that the technical part got better as we went along.
That's exactly what it turned out to be. Yeah. Is I did all the technical stuff. I made the kites fly the way they needed to fly. I helped her understand position and how to make it turn that nice crisp corner. She taught me how to fly the choreography.
Yeah. Now, if you could only remember, it would be a good thing. Whoa.
All right, so I'm going to take a little cut in the audio here, and we're going to cut out a little bit because while we were recording this interview, Paul went to land his kite kind of close to us, and he ended up landing right across the camera and the microphone, and so we had to make sure that we got everything untangled before we started up again. So that's to say that even some of the best flyers in the world, they sometimes make little slip-ups, and it's okay. The key is to not panic. And it was pretty easy to undo it, and nothing was hurt. Nobody was hurt. Everything was great. We just kind of kept laughing about it. And yeah, so I'm going to hop back into the episode now.
That's good.
Appreciate it. All right, so back to choreography. And so Jerry, you were doing the technical side, and Marcia was doing the choreography.
And I had to finally realize that, yes, you are the choreographer, and you set size, you set shape, I follow you. And once we did that...
Yeah, we quit arguing. Things worked better.
We have a dear friend named Ron Suimatsu,
oh,
who used to do all the indoor stuff down here at Wiskiff. And we were out flying one day with him. And we started this. He said, "I got your new name for your team. Team Dissension." And it was like a stake in my heart. Because that's the last thing we want, to portray. And I told him about a month ago. We went up to the indoor event they do up north. And I said, "Ron, I got to thank you for the new name of the team when you said we were Team Dissension." He said, "Well, I was just kidding." I said, "I don't care what you were doing. It was like a dagger in my heart because I don't want to come across that way." And we changed after that. We can fly together now and hardly ever say a word. But it's...
But we laugh a lot when we crash in the dunes.
Yeah. Yeah, our big struggle right now is 76 years old, the mind doesn't work like it used to. And I've been trying and trying and trying to remember. I've got the routine all written down. I'm able to see it. I'm able to finger fly it with the music. I get out here and it goes, So we asked the question this week, is that what we're supposed to be doing? We're out here because of people, other folks, and I don't want to detract from that by getting so wired up by trying to fly that I'll do a demo now and again, but I don't have any choreography for it. I just go fly. You can't do that when you got a partner. You got to have the choreography. We've got one other option, and we've got 100-foot tails for our quantum pros, and we can go out and
we're not stuck doing just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Even without choreography, you can still fly together because you have each other's awareness of space.
Right.
Yeah.
So it could be, okay, we're doing figure eights.
Yep.
We're doing boxes.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Well, we do that all the time. That's about all we do anymore. Yeah. Is we come out and, you know, he calls what we're going to do and then, you know.
Yeah. And we do, you know, diamonds and from the top down, bottom up. You know, it makes no difference. But yeah, you can put a lot of stuff together.
Hey, we did refuel landings the other day.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do. But, you know, that routine is so dynamic and so neat. I want to do it so bad. But I can't get my head wrapped around it for some crazy reason. So
yeah.
We just step back a little bit and ask ourselves, is that what we're supposed to be doing?
What's bringing you joy out here?
Yeah,
just getting out and watching people and, you know, helping someone else if they need it. And that's pretty much what does it for us these days. I mean, you know, this is a sport, though, that you can fly for years.
Yeah.
You know, you can get, we got real intense in the competition for a while.
Yeah.
And then when after COVID hit and everything, well, things were going down anyway before that. But we still kept flying just for the fun of it. And we find out we're back to enjoying it like when we first started.
Yeah.
And that you know, it's kind of like playing volleyball. It's a sport you can do all your, you know, your whole life.
Just not with the same intensity.
Just not with the same intensity, right.
I think it is one of the, I guess, positive aspects of the pandemic was that it forced everybody to look at their hobbies seriously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Am I still enjoying this? Or what can I do to still enjoy this? Because now everything's stripped away, so all I'm going to do is just the hobby. Like, I'm not super intensive on the competition or on the prepping for competition or the politics of competition and everything.
The time and effort put in.
Yeah.
We used to go to the beach every single weekend.
Oh, wow.
For 3.5 years.
Wow.
And if it wasn't for a competition, it was practice. When I flew a team Cutting Edge, it was, you go out at 10 in the morning, you go back at 4. You're done at 4. We'd stop for lunch usually, but I don't care what the wind was, I don't care what the weather was, we were out there.
We're out practicing in that weather.
Yeah, and we put a lot of time and effort in them. When Marcia put her team together.
We weren't quite as serious as they were.
But they qualified to go to France.
Yeah.
They beat dogs playing cards back in, where was it?
That was in Ohio.
Ohio.
Yeah, indeed.
And it devastated some people. These women, first woman's team at Worlds, all women. And they.
We did not finish dead last. We did well.
Did you accomplish what you set out to do?
Yeah, we did. Well, it started out, he got on this team with Cutting Edge, and I'm going, we were just getting into our pairs. I got two choices. I can either be upset about it, or I can do something about it. There are only two other gals that flew a lot. So I asked him, and he says, oh, sure, let's fly team. And, you know, and we had fun putting it together.
Nice.
We did. And I mean, we wanted to go to Nationals. And we got there, and then what happened from there on out was kind of, whoa, look at this. I mean, we weren't really expecting to do too well, you know, but we did better than we thought. And we made a lot of fun friends along the way, especially when we got to France.
Yep.
Nice. Well, speaking of France and the World Cup, I know the World Kite Championships was a little bit different in the years that, you guys competed. The format and everything else. But you guys have been helping part of Team USA during their training session. Any wisdom or advice or anything that you think is important for any team, actually?
I think the most important thing that these guys learn is the warm-up. Sense size, speed, and shape. You do box left, box right, you do circles, big circle, small circle, circles together, and it sets everything up so that when the music starts, you're thinking same size and shape. And when they started doing that, the very next time we watched them fly was so different than what it was before.
Nice.
Because they, you know, I'm not an expert, I'm the technical guy. She's the choreographer. And that's what we tried to do, is the last thing I wanted to do is be critical of what they're doing. In this short time, marvelous job. Marvelous job. And every time they fly, in any wind, it's a little better each time when they put their time and effort in.
Yeah.
And I just think that what they've got together is what every pairs or team needs, is a continuity between the two people. And they fly similarly. Their skill levels are very close to each other. I thought they were having a problem with hand motions, but they weren't. I stood beside so I could see both of them, and it all the same. Waddy does his up here, Paul does his down here, but it's all the same. I told Paul, I said, you know, do you still like to fly on your fingers, or are you gonna? And
yeah.
He switched and went to the wrist. That's the same as Waddy does. Now, we found that with Marcia, she used to fly with her fingers.
Yeah.
And every time she tried to do a square corner, her fingers would wiggle.
And it would show. It would translate into the kite.
She doesn't have the hand strength like I do. But she would bang, and the kite would go up this way or go up that way. And it was all the time different. That's why we ended up building these. Because they don't wiggle, they don't move.
Nice.
And
they're a lot better.
She started flying with the handles, stick straight.
Nice.
So,
Yeah.
Well, we touched base a little bit between the two of you, but also in your reference to them, is that a skill that in a way is hard to learn, it kind of already has to somewhat there, and then you foster it, is that awareness of each other and that awareness of how each other moves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in particular you guys, for you two, that you did to kind of foster that? I mean, it helps that you are married and you physically know each other. And
right.
You know how people, like, you see each other off the field, right? So you know how, if he steps back with his right foot, he always kind of pulls to the side. And that's just, you know each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But is there anything the two of you did to kind of help foster that awareness of space?
Me following her lead.
Yeah, he let me lead and he followed. And if I went offline, he followed.
I went offline with her.
Yeah, he made the adjustments more than I did.
If she, when we do our refuel, if she goes up on an angle, I stick with her.
He has to go that way too.
And it was my adjusting to her flying.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's masterful at speed control. Where,
that's my pet thing. Yes.
I have never been a real speed control person. After I start flying with her. When you have two kites coming down the window, one on the outside, one on the inside kite is going to fly faster.
Yes.
Because of the placement in the wind window. So she's slowing it down and I'm going by her and I'm on the outside. I'm going, what in the world? And learning speed control is huge. Just huge. These guys already know speed control, and they're putting it in their business. They're making it right, and you know, we didn't have to say hardly anything. You know, just be the eyes, tell them what we see, and we do the same thing when we fly together. You know, we do what they call a refuel landing. Well, we did that with Team Cutting Edge in our precision routine. It gets big points when you do it.
Yeah.
You land three kites
together. It's very
together.
Showy.
Yeah, yeah, very.
But we like to try different stuff. We used to do refueled axles.
Used to.
You want a ball of string?
Uh-huh. Refueled axle.
That's
like
how
one.
You get it. But we hit them every once in a while, just
yeah,
for the fun
now
of
then.
It. But I'm excited to see how this quote unquote competition over in Bear is going to go. I'm concerned with format. You only get one. We had 3 days where we flew our precision and our ballet, and you got to throw away the bad one. These guys got one shot.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's not only one shot, but it's a cumulative score of the whole team.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's the individual individual discipline placement.
Right.
But then that gets combined
cumulative
together.
Wow.
Then, so it becomes the country becomes first, second, third.
Oh, that's nice.
On cumulative score. So.
Oh my.
Yeah.
That's another aspect that throws another woohoo into
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No pressure. Yeah. Do your part. Don't worry about anybody else.
I know what Paul said to me. If I feel good about when I flew, I'm okay with where they place us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the perfect attitude to go into it.
Yeah. I this time I think everyone's very realistic. Podium would be awesome.
It would
right?
be.
Mm-hmm. But the main focus was about how the team can kind of come together in its various parts, how we can represent, how we can get there,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And how we can actually make a good showing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if a win or a podium comes, that's great, right? But that's not the focus.
Not the whole thing. But that was opposite.
Of when what Jim Cutting Edge did.
When Jim Barber said, would you like to fly with us? I'm going, oh man, let me think. I got to think about this because I knew it was going to be a heavy commitment. And I went back to him and I said, what do you expect out of me? And what is the goal? And the goal was win a world championship.
Which is a very awesome goal. If you guys are all set out from the start that's what
right.
we want to do,
mm-hmm.
that's...
And that's what it was. And I said, what kind of commitment? They said, every weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick was coming from Puyallup. He had a house at the beach, but he had to drive from Puyallup every time. And you know, we're from Auburn, so we had to drive down to the beach, down to Ocean Shores. Jim lived there. We'd meet at the shop at 10 o'clock in the morning, go out on the beach, and I don't care what the wind was, what the weather was, that's what we did.
10 to 4 every day.
And it was, I will say, our family lost out. Because it was 3.5 years of every single weekend. And do I count it worth it? If I had it to do again, I don't know if I'd do it. Because it was that much time. Somebody asked me, what's it cost you to fly kites? I said, well, right now it's about $60,000.
Yeah.
What? I said, well, the truck, the trailer, you know, the RV spot, all that, it, you know, it's all cumulative.
Yeah.
The kites, we got sponsored. So.
Yeah, we did too.
That's the easy part.
Yeah.
It's the everything else.
Yeah. So, I mean, it takes dedication if you want to get to the top, and it takes work.
Don't worry about it.
And these two guys got the work ethic to do
it. In.
But it, you know, it.
It takes a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have the very distinct privilege of saying I was a 58-year-old world champion. And, you know, where is that on the scale of things in my life? It's not very high. You know, it's kites. It's fun.
it's still an accomplishment.
But it is an accomplishment. When Bob Wendt introduces me on the indoor, and he's still, hey, two-time world champion.
Enough.
But it, you know, it, it was what we did. You know, Marcia and the gals, they had horrifying wind in France. They had it off the buildings, or none at all.
And, except for the two demo days.
Yeah.
We did great on those days. We flew our whole routine, hit the refuel, did it all. Competition days.
Oh, man.
It's okay, yeah.
But it was fun, though. There's an awful lot about team flying or pairs flying that it takes some work.
It does.
You know?
Yeah.
And
you mentioned something about, I guess, mentality and approach. And I know it's been a discussion we've had a lot with Paul and Wadi and a handful of other people, is the ethics and the philosophy and the psychology of how you approach this, right? That you were saying Team Cutting Edge had this, like, ethical standard of, we have to work this hard in order to earn our place on the podium, right? I was just wondering if you have any other, I guess, tidbits or suggestions or thoughts on ethics and professionalism when it came to the kite field or to competition or to both of your teams,
right?
Did you have anything that you set as a standard, like, we are always going to make sure we clean up, always going to make sure that we have a great attitude? Any of it?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it just sets your level of a commitment, and then you expect your teammates to be there, and you are too.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, that was basically what I had to say, just the commitment factor.
Right.
You know, if you commit to it, then you fulfill your end of that. You always show up when there's practice and competition, and you expect that your teammates will too. And then, you know, when you're all together, you just kind of gel better. But if somebody's missing or doesn't show up, you know, what do you do?
Yeah.
It messes with the whole thing. But, yeah.
I think that commitment, without it, it's not going to work. You know, we went to France in 2004 with a cowboy routine that had 12 gunshots at the end of it. And we warned people, it's not real.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but the cops are walking around with their Uzis, you know. These are not real gunshots.
It's part of the music.
That commitment thing, as we're on the plane flying back after capturing a podium at third place by 2/100ths of a point, Rick said to me, got a brand new routine. I said, I just learned this one.
But he's a breather. Yeah.
And he never wrote anything down either.
Wow.
It was all done up here. And he could articulate it perfectly. I had to write it down. So I'd let him run through it, and I'd start writing notes, and I'd put the figures on a piece of paper. The second routine was dramatically different, with every aspect of team that you could throw at it. And he was committed to putting the best routine in the air that he could. Rick and Jim flew differently than I did. They adjusted and I adjusted so that we came together, and the commitment out of all three of us was identical. And it paid. It worked. I mean, I look at Paul and Wadi, and I'm going, we got such a short time to put it together.
Yeah.
We flew for 3 months together just trying to figure out how to fly together.
Yeah.
And Jim Barber said, we're going to nationals to see if we can win a spot. What? Well, we qualified for all expense paid. Marcia qualified with her team, and all I had to do was pay the airfare.
Nice.
That was only $500.
At that time, yeah.
So, nice. But I think Marcia's absolutely right. If you say you're going to do it, do it. You know,
and whatever your level of commitment, if you want it to be more relaxed, fine. You know, but you know, everybody has to. Yeah, everybody has to show up when they say they're going to.
And I think one of the other things that I learned: if you screw up, you screw up. Mm-hmm. Let it go.
Yeah.
And Rick Wolcott did that for me. Nationals, Ocean City, Maryland. He broke his line on my kite. Oof. Because he came across me. Spin of death.
Yeah.
We got a 46 for precision. And Rick says, man, you know, I screwed up. I'm sorry. But gotta let it go. We went out and I think it was an 83.7. 93.7, excuse me, for the precision routine, or for the ballet routine, that same day.
Wow.
Rick let it go.
And I went,
okay.
Yep.
You know, I learning to fly with Dean, we had got brand new kites. We got rid of the North Shores and we bought some other kites. We're on the beach. This was a custom built vent. We're all three flying down the window, and I forgot which way to turn. And I buried the kite in the sand, split the sail in two spots, broke three out of the rods.
Oh boy.
And Rick's comment to me, what happened? Did little Jerry take over? And he did it in jest.
Yeah.
I made three little guys out of G.I. Joe's.
Yeah.
Mine was little Jerry, his was little Ricky, and then we had big Jimbo.
Nice.
And they went to France with us.
Oh yeah, they were their table decoration the whole week.
I had a flag that I built, just a flag about that big that I stood with them, that said, Team Cutting Edge featuring little Jerry. What we ended up with as three guys flying together was a relationship that was rock solid.
Yeah. Nice.
I mean, it. We melded together because we wanted to. And you did that with Vicky and Mary, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got caught one night practicing stick flying. People were standing in the hallway looking at us. We were in this. We were getting silly. We're thinking, we got to wear jewels up our arms, you know, and do this and that. We were so tired. We should have just quit and gone to bed. But it was fun. We had that kind of close relationship where we could, you know, just goof off and enjoy it. And then we got serious on the field. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, she talked about the commitment with the three ladies. Mm-hmm. After one of them quit flying, they asked another lady to join them. And it was, oh yeah, I'd love to do that. I want to do that. Yay. Oh, I can't come out today. I've got to work. Oh, I can't do this.
And we finally said, oh, this isn't worth it. Yeah. And so that day, all three of us were there. We went out and played. You know, we parted friends as far as that went. But
that ended it.
It was
tough, but there was no commitment. Mm-mm. It was a verbal thing, but that was it. So yeah, I think commitment is.
I think so, yeah.
And you gotta, as a team, you gotta commit to it. What do you wanna do? Wanna just go have fun? Go have fun. You wanna win a world championship? You put the work in. So, I think they, Paul and Waddy have the right idea. If we feel good about what we flew, we're okay with where they place us. I mean, what's it? How many weeks?
Five. Yeah. We leave next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've only had 12 days total flying together.
Right. Right.
I know, I got the impression that this World Cup that's going on this time is more to help promote the sport worldwide rather than be a stiff competition. I don't know, maybe I'm all wet, but.
No, I mean, it's the same impression I have.
Yeah, right? That's the impression
that's how
I got.
I'm approaching it. Support staff and mm-hmm. everything else is. This is our chance to show the kite community, like, hey, sport kiting is alive and it's here.
Yeah.
And look what we made happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet some of the other the other teams. You know, there are the well-known name flyers that are a part of this, but then there's like the folks from China and Taiwan. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I can't wait to meet them and spend some time with them and get to know more about sport kiting in their area.
There were teams that were aloof. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even get close to them. And then there were teams like the Japanese teams. Amazing people.
They were very
Neo
friendly.
Was two women and a guy, I think.
Yeah,
wasn't
yeah.
And they came in one day and they had their picture in Lincoln City, their picture
in
the
in
paper.
The paper.
And she was just as proud.
So excited.
Yeah.
Hey,
we had the Malaysian guys that we used to give rides up to the field at the casino.
They were fun.
And one day, and this is part of Rick's training for me, if you screw up, just let it go. You got two more days. This gentleman broke a rod, crashed his kite, and it was over for him, you know, and it was ballet. And he was just down in the dump, sitting on the field.
Yeah.
I walked over and I said, hey, what's going on? Oh, I screwed up. I messed up our team. Our team's not going to do this. Well, I let the team down. I said, no, you didn't. You just crashed. Don't worry about it. You got to let it go and go on. You got two more days. Oh, well, I don't have a rod to fix my kite. Marshall walks
over. I gave him one.
Here you go.
Here. I'm not flying, but I got rods here.
About an hour later, he walked back over to me. He reaches down, he grabs a handful of grass, and he goes, all gone. He said, thank you.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that you hope for in that big team environment where you can encourage other flyers.
Oh, yeah.
Why are we out here today?
Yeah.
These two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Want to be encouraging. You know, give it your best shot. And they are. They're working their behinds off to get it right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... I was sitting at our site down in Lincoln City, and the guy that finally said it's gone, he walked up one day and he's carrying a pulling chainsaw that he bought for his dad. And he said, you're not Team Cutting Edge, we are. And he holds his chainsaw up.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with some of the people. There were, what, three French teams?
Yeah.
Four.
Three.
Well, anyway, the bottom of the three.
Yeah.
they flew to the same off the same CD that we did. And so we recognized their music. They flew, so we were cracking up. And then when we flew ours, they were laughing at us. And we had chicken wind socks with us. It was off a chicken run.
Oh,
and so
boy.
We had wind socks. So they went looking one day. We went and buried one under their kites just on the beach just for fun. That was in France, you know. Well, how many years later was it they came to Lincoln City? And these five guys are lined up. It's the short guy up to the tall guy. They have my chicken on a pole, and they march right around me, and I'm
singing,
I'm dying laughing, singing and whistling the song.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so you make these connections, and they're memorable, you know, they are. Some of them we still keep up with, some of them we don't, but it's kind of fun. I enjoy the people. That's what keeps me coming back to flying kites, is the people.
Yep.
The team that we beat by 0.02 of a point for third place was Kamikaze.
Mm.
It was two guys and a gal, and Masuru and Chicago were part of the team, and then there was one other guy. When they announced third place, and it wasn't them, they were crushed. They got up and walked out of the banquet hall. And I thought, oh, man, that's terrible. And they came back in about a half hour later and celebrated with us. And Chicago spoke just a tiny bit of English.
Not as much
I said,
as we spoke Japanese.
Tell your teammates, best demonstration of sportsmanship I've ever seen. And it's still here. We flew over to Uchinada to the festival over there, Team Cutting Edge did. Guess who met us there?
Kamikaze.
Yeah, just the two of them. But she walked up with tears streaming in her face, give me a big hug, and it was, yeah. When the earthquake happened, when the power plant blew up, mm-hmm. first one I texted them to see how they're doing. Yeah. Now we're in the south, don't worry about us, we're safe. But yeah, that's what you're gonna get some of that too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Getting to know some of those different people from different countries. There might be a language barrier, you know what? It's okay.
Yeah, we now have little mini computers in our pocket that can translate for us.
So yeah.
We're gonna make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is a fun time to be in that community.
Yeah.
And you have lunch together in a big tent.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was spectacular that you got a house to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun.
We had tiny
essentially
little...
in a village of the country houses, right? So each country has its own house in
that's
this tiny
awesome.
Little vacation village.
And oh,
so
that's
it's very
nice.
Much like the Olympics in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that we're all kind of together.
I
Which
like
is perfect them. Timing with the Olympics happening.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
We're the other Team USA.
Well, I think what's happening in that venue, it's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah.
It's historic. You know, you're just like 30 miles south of the tunnel, and all the teams that show up, yeah, they got a goal. Yeah, we want to win, but it's more about the relationships with other flyers.
Mm-hmm.
I met Carl Robert Shaw over there when he was flying with Scratch Bunnies.
Yeah,
they were the goofiest bunch of guys. And they were more concerned about having fun flying
than anything. Yeah.
Then they flopped the other way, and
they decided one year to get serious, and they won.
And they did. They got real serious.
Yeah.
It was an experience that you may only get once or twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're trying to soak up every minute of it.
Oh yeah.
Really try and, share it with everybody else that might not be able to go. Be like,
yeah.
These times make it work.
Look forward to seeing some videos.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any final thoughts?
Appreciate the opportunity just to sit and chat. And
thank you to both of you for not only helping the team kind of and imparting your wisdom, but also thank you for sharing your thoughts with
I appreciate all of
that.
It. Very good.
Yay.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode, and I hope you were able to maybe gain some insight listening to Jerry and Marsha and what they shared about what they learned in their time at World Championships, the Sport Kite Championships previously, and about the people that they flew with and the connections they made there. Do stay tuned to our channels. We're going to be publishing a lot from Berks-sur-Mer. We're going to be trying to do continuous live updates on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the podcast. And then we'll do some recaps. We're going to do a lot of interviews, some tech talk, stuff like that, with some of the other teams that are on the field. So make sure you've given us a like and a subscribe and a follow on all the various platforms. And you can always, if you're not into social media, you can always find a lot of it also on sportkite.org. For right now, just go check out the Team USA page. We'll be posting a lot there, and then we'll be adding even more as we go along. I'll probably have a dedicated page to the World Kite Cup. I just have to kind of get it up and running. All right, so I'll see you all out on the kite field. We have to go hop on a plane now and head over to Berks-sur-Mer, France. So, see you there.